Time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor and publisher of The Timber Day. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, a week's flown by already. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, you bet. Happy to be here.
Well, let's start off our conversation today about some of the stories that you've been covering. And a group of 33 retired National Forest employees kind of took a stand and have sent their thoughts to the White House, hoping they will overturn the Twin Metals project. I wonder if you can explain this a little bit more.
Sure. This letter was drafted, actually written primarily by Brenda Halter, who was for a period of time here a few years back, was the forest supervisor on the Superior National Forest. She was very much involved in some of these, you know, overseeing some of these mining projects that were developing on the forest. She's since retired, as have a number of other people, many of them who were also involved in various aspects of development of these mining projects, the copper-nickel projects, I should point out. And since there's been a substantial change, obviously, in the direction that the federal government is going on this under the Obama administration, of course, the two federal mineral leases that were related to the Twin Metals project were actually canceled. It looked like that project was probably dead. Then, you know, when President Trump was elected, that changed, a reverse course, and they did wiped away everything that the Obama administration had done, including canceling a two-year study of a 20-year mineral withdrawal within a large portion of the Superior National Forest within the Rainy River watershed, and that those would be waters that flow into the Boundary Waters. And so these 30 Forest Service employees, retired, decided to write a letter expressing their concerns about this. They said, you know, collectively between them, they have nearly 1,000 years of experience in resource management, and a lot of it has been spent on the Superior National Forest. They say they're very, aware of the risks associated with sulfide mining and the acid mine drainage that comes from these kinds of operations, and they're very concerned that in the highly complex and interconnected surface and subsurface waters of the Rainy River watershed provide an immediate and irremediable transport mechanism for toxic material to move through the boundary waters, as well as further downstream. And they're basically saying that this is a high-risk venture. The chances of serious and permanent environmental harm to the boundary waters is very significant. And they're asking both the Department of Interior and the Agriculture Department, which is where the Forest Service is part of, they're asking them to reinstate that study of the mineral withdrawal. They're unhappy because that study was about 4 months away from completion, and it was a two-year study, so it was already mostly completed, but the Trump administration opted to discontinue the study and then have so far not released any of the information that was developed during that study. So that's one issue. They also want the Department of Interior to recognize that the Forest Service does have authority to deny or consent to any lease renewals. And the Trump administration, the Interior Department, has tried to get around that law by basically saying they don't have a choice but to renew these leases. That, of course, is subject to litigation, and it's probably likely that the administration will lose that case. But obviously, it still remains to be seen. They're also asking for a suspension of all authorizations, any further authorizations related to any new mining leases in the Rainy River watershed. And they want the two mineral leases for Twin Metals that the Trump administration reinstated. They want those suspended at this point. So I suspect that this letter won't have much impact on the Trump administration, at least at the higher levels. But in interviewing Brenda Halter, she said she is at least hopeful that it will have some effect at the higher levels of the Forest Service, where I think the experience and expertise of these individuals is probably better known, and you know it'll probably have some weight with them. And she also felt that the attention that this is getting in the media also helps to educate the public about some of the issues here.
Another story you've been working on, Marshall, has a little bit of Hollywood in northern Minnesota. Tell us about it. Or
yeah, that's
Park,
right.
Park City, Utah, maybe is a better way to say it.
Exactly. What we have here, and this is a project that has been going on for a number of months in Tower. There's a little company in Tower known as Sunrise River Boat Works. And it's just a couple of guys who make their living restoring old wooden boats. And they have a doozy of a project here that they've been working on for a long time. And it turns out that this boat was built back in the mid-'80s, 1980s, for Robert Redford. And he owned the boat. I'm talking about the actor here. And he owned the boat for about 10 years, used it primarily for water skiing and just sort of, you know, pleasure boating. And he eventually sold it. And after a couple of owners, it worked its way up to Burnside Lake, but needed some work. And so the Sunrise Boat Works has been involved in working on it. And it's quite a project. I mean, they say they have 1,700 hours so far into this boat. And it's been a pretty remarkable overhaul. They're doing some things that will enable it to basically go in and out of the water without having to soak, which a lot of wooden boats, they were designed to have to soak in the water for a long time before you could use them. You know, it would swell the wood, so everything would be sealed. They've taken steps to prevent that from being an issue. And they've also then redone all the woodwork, and it's just fantastic. I mean, they have 18 coats of varnish on top of the wood. I mean, so everything just glistens. And just to give you an idea of how extreme some of this has been, they had a sign painter come up from the Twin Cities for 2 days to redo all the lettering on this boat in real gold leaf. So apparently no expense is being spared to return this boat to its original luster. And I should mention this boat because I'm sure there'll be some of the aficionados out there will be wondering, well, what kind of boat is this? Well, it's a 23-footer. It's a Grand Craft Tahoe hardtop, and it was built in Holland, Michigan in 1984. Now, for the trivia buffs, Grand Craft was a wooden boat shop that was started by retired Chris Craft employees who apparently decided they were going to go into business again after Chris Craft shut down its Holland, Michigan plant in the mid-1980s. So they decided to take that over and begin this new line of boats. So I don't know exactly how many Grand Craft wooden boats are out there, but no doubt this is going to be an exceptional boat once it's done, and I'm sure it's going to get a lot of attention at some of the area wooden boat shows, which are held, throughout Minnesota and around the country. But I know there's always one on Lake Vermilion on Labor Day weekend every year, so I'm sure that this boat will probably make an appearance there as well.
Yeah, the wooden boats are interesting. What lakes they end up being on, and where the collectors are, you know, they're a big deal. I know down in Cross Lake and Vermilion must have a bunch of them, like you said, right?
And they have a show. It does. Yes, yeah. It seems like wherever there's some money, you will find nice wooden boats.
Yeah.
Because they are classic.
Yeah, that's true. Well, let's talk about another story that's gotten a lot of feedback to what you've been reporting. It has to do with a school referendum. The vote is on Tuesday, so this is very timely. Tell us about the story and what you were covering in relation to this referendum.
Sure. Well, this has to do with the Virginia Eveleth Gilbert School Collaboration. It's a proposal by the districts to, it's a $178 million bond measure. And they're looking at a number of new facilities here, including a combined school for the high school for Virginia and Eveleth Gilbert. And it would be built right along Highway 53, you know, in the Eveleth area. As part of this, they would also be looking at doing what they call a career-based academy. It'd be a different style of learning, more project-based. I mean, a lot of the ideas sound good in terms of the educational aspects of it, you know, and it looks like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this is approved by voters. It comes to a vote on Tuesday. But the thing that we really focused on was an issue that we've reported on before with the St. Louis County School Districts, which was that the school districts have been disseminating information. These are mailers that they've been sending out, as well as ads that have run in area newspapers. And the material that they're putting out appears very one-sided and would be considered promotional in nature. And, of course, that was an issue that came up and to haunt the St. Louis County School District when they had promoted the passage of their referendum back in 2009 by putting out, one-sided materials. And they ended up in 5 years of litigation as a result of that. And so we were looking at some of those concerns, one of the questions being whether or not the school districts were providing campaign finance reporting, which was one of the issues that was addressed in the St. Louis County case, where the courts decided that, in fact, if school districts do use tax dollars to promote passage of a ballot measure, that they need to file campaign finance reports. And to date, the school districts had not done that, but actually, in response to our story, they did commit to doing that. So that's a good step forward. But, of course, there's still the underlying issue, which the courts in Minnesota have not addressed specifically yet, although courts in other states have, and that's whether or not public bodies like school districts are allowed to use tax dollars to promote passage of a ballot measure. There are attorney general's opinions on this in Minnesota which say that they cannot use those tax dollars for those purposes. So there's an underlying issue here about whether this is a proper use of money, and so public money. And so that was kind of the focus of our story here. And not surprisingly, some in the school district did not like that.
So it has to do with that this is a vote. So this might be, there's laws in place that govern it, just like when you go in to vote, the people who are running for office have to follow certain laws and file.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. They have to file campaign finance reports, just as the school districts do now, if they're going to promote passage of a referendum. Now, for years, school districts used to put out, pretty basic information, and they're still allowed to do that, and it's not considered promotion by simply telling the public, here's what we're asking you to vote on, here's what the tax implications are going to be, here's what the money's going to be used for, things like that. They're not required to, do a campaign finance report for just putting out basic, neutral information. But if they put out information that is totally one-sided, you only hear from the supporters. You don't hear anything from people who are opposed to it, and it's all glowing information about the benefits of it, then that crosses the line from providing neutral information into providing promotional material, and they're not supposed to do that. So we'll see what happens here. But this certainly does pose the risk to school districts that there could be litigation stemming from something like this.
As an editor, as a reporter, do you pay attention to the feedback you're getting on things like this? And
certainly, yeah. And it's all part of the whole idea of exploring any issue.
Right.
I never pretend that we have all the facts and we get everything right. So having the opportunity on Facebook or on our website for folks to weigh in and express their own views, that's fine. That's part of the public debate.
All right, so big weekend, Mother's Day, of course, and opening fishing. Are you going to be out in the sun, Ray?
That would be nice, but in fact, I'll be in a boat that's probably a little better designed for fishing.
Okay.
I typically go out with a friend of mine who's a guide on Lake Vermilion, and so we will be out checking out the walleye action. I'll hope to be catching some fish as well as taking some photographs and talking to folks about how it's going. Overall, I think everybody's pretty optimistic here. I think the ice outs this year were kind of right on schedule. So, the walleye should probably be in the places you'd normally expect them in an average year. And there's certainly plenty of walleyes all over on Vermilion and lots of other lakes up here. So I'm sure if the weather's nice, people will be out in droves and probably having a good time out on the water.
It's Marshall Hellenberger, the Timberjay. You can find information, see photos at timberjay.com. Marshall, we'll check in with you next week. We expect to hear about the fish you caught.
All right. Sounds good, Heidi.